Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Today, we have a special multi-guest episode where we are discussing an exciting initiative led by Insights in Color, Lucid, and Think Now. Before we dive in, I'd like to introduce you to our three guests. First, we have founder of Insights in Color and A Touch of Wit, Whitney Dunlop Fowler. Second, we have Talia Lipkind, Associate Director of Trust and Safety Ops at Lucid. And last but not least, Trey Riles, Associate Director of Partner Programs at Lucid. Welcome, everyone.
Thanks for having us.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you for having us. Excited to be here.
Yeah, I did not ask if I pronounced your names correctly, but I did. Did I do okay?
Got mine right.
Okay.
Yep.
Awesome. So before we dive into the topic today, I'd like to start kind of giving our listeners background. We all come from different sides of the sample industry strategy game, so it would be great to learn a little bit about your respective roles. Whitney, can you kick it off for us?
Sure. And I'm thankful to be back again on this podcast. Mario, you and I touched base, I want to say last summer for the last one, and that was really fun. I remember that very well.
That's right. Welcome back.
But yeah, so Whitney Dunlap Fowler, founder of Touch of Wit, like Mario said, I've been in Insights in Color. I've been in the industry for 10 years, starting on the qualitative coordinator side, eventually evolving into a brand strategist, cultural strategist, and within that wheelhouse, a semiotician, and then eventually a multicultural strategist. So I tend to wear multiple hats. I founded Touch of Wit at the end of 2019, working across all of those variables. And shortly after that, founded Insights in Color in the summer of 2020. To kind of help fill the void and what we were feeling in the research industry when it came to diversity and inclusion.
Great. Thanks for the background. Talia, tell us a little bit about your role, Director of Trust and Safety Ops at Lucid.
Yeah, great. Thanks. So again, you know, my name is Talia. I'm on the Trust and Safety Ops team at Lucid. And trust and safety is a pretty new sort of function at Lucid, and we're excited about it. And really sort of the goal here is to, you know, protect the health and quality of our ecosystem and our marketplace with the goal of sort of reducing friction for our clients, whether that's on the buy side, researchers, and also on the supply side, the panel companies, as well as really the respondents and sort of protecting that respondent experience. So, you know, what that looks like is sort of, you know, looking at the health and quality of individual surveys. Are they set up correctly? Are they good design? Are they, you know, respondent centric? Quality of respondents. So, you know, are respondents who they say they are? Are they good quality respondents? And lastly is sort of the health and quality of, you know, the profiling data on our platform. So that's sort of, you know, the context of this conversation is related to, you know, demographics of respondents. You know, how do we ask those questions? And how do we share that with different parts of you know, the market research industry?
Very interesting, multifaceted. I have a lot of questions, but we'll save that for when we dive in. Trey, I want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about your position there, Associate Director of Partner Programs.
Sure. Thanks, Mario. And for those of you who don't know, Lucid is a programmatic platform that Talia alluded to. It's a two-sided marketplace. We have buyers on one side and suppliers with panel companies and respondents on the other. And Lucid makes the connections between the two. So while we don't host any surveys ourselves, we direct respondents to the appropriate survey. Using our programmatic technologies and APIs that both buyers and suppliers plug into. And my role at Lucid, I've been there for a little over 5 years now, and have been focused on the supply side of the house, helping to grow and onboard new suppliers and helping them optimize their integrations And today, Associate Director of Partner Programs, really looking to enable both our internal teams as well as our external suppliers to provide and succeed on the platform.
Great. So thank you for that. And as you can see, we have lots of different backgrounds, interesting intersection of sample, supply, multicultural, strategy, semiotics, but we came together actually, and this is a unique podcast in the world focused talking about one initiative where, I actually want to give it to Whitney to give us a little bit of background, kind of the work that Insights in Color and Think Now have been doing with Lucid in terms of demographic questions.
Yeah, sure. I think it's interesting that I'm introducing this, Mario, because you kind of brokered the initial introduction. But essentially, the goal of our partnership, Insights in Color, Think Now, and Lucid, is to help the industry move forward a little bit. So just as a background, Insights in Color's goal is to really shift and change the way the market research industry has been organized and how it kind of proceeds to move forward in different areas of research. The industry we know was not necessarily built for multicultural consumers or, for that matter, multicultural researchers. And as, you know, culture has shifted, our methodologies have not been able to necessarily keep up with that. And so upon founding Insights in Color, I got a lot of questions from different brands and agency teams wanting to know, like, what's the right way to think about identity in this new era where intersectionality and gender and race, sexuality are increasingly a part of the lives of, or how our consumers tend to identify today. And as Insights in Color was beginning to solve those questions and in probably a roundabout way, we were introduced to Lucid through Think Now as a partner to kind of help create some industry standards around this thing that people keep filling my inbox over with by putting some rules and guardrails around how to think about identity, the variables that we kind of put on our panel sample checklists, and to some degree, this will definitely merge into all aspects of research, right? Just to make sure that we have a singular way for how we're capturing things, but a singular way that's not, like in the past, kind of rooted in a way that can't be moved, right? So part of that is making sure that we set up a platform that's a little bit more flexible, and that can move and react to culture in the way that identity has been evolving in the recent, in the last couple of years.
Yeah, thank you. And you know, you mentioned this was something you know that I was really passionate about when joining Insights in Color, and you know, Lucid was definitely the first platform or partner that came to mind because of the impact. And as you heard from Talia and Trey, right? There's so many different facets, but I think the most interesting part is just the scope of it. You know, these decisions we're making in terms of updating demographic questions to reflect the reality of how consumers today are identifying has a really broad impact. So it's super exciting. And Talia, you know, from your perspective, you know, you've been a great partner, were receptive early on. Why was it important for Lucid to start thinking about updating demographic questions? I mean, and this, I think this touches a little bit in Trey's department as well. I'm sure you've been having clients and partners reach out to you how to deal with kind of this new reality in terms of identification.
Yeah, great question. I mean, you know, the industry, the market research industry has historically really relied on the census to understand, you know, demographic questions, how should we frame this, you know, and, you know, kind of having that as the guiding light of how we identify respondents. And I think that has sort of led us to miss out a bit on truly understanding an individual's identity. You know, the purpose of the census isn't necessarily to understand the dynamic aspects of an individual's human perspective. You know, the census's history is very political and it's very slow to adapt. So I think, you know, as researchers, it's our duty to sort of, you know, drive these questions about identity forward and actually trust respondents to tell us who they are rather than kind of put them into buckets that we haven't really had the creativity to adjust. And so I think, you know, time-wise with everything, you know, that happened in 2020, you know, I think the industry is really ready to make changes as our country sort of collectively starts to have a better understanding of identity in the United States. And to that point, you know, I think the timing is also great because our industry, especially on sort of the research side, the buy side, has become increasingly much more tech enabled, much more programmatic, and having that sort of iterative, automated tech mindset rather than a slower, old school research mindset. So I think, you know, sort of the res tech industry, as that, you know, continues to grow, I think we're ready to have the ability to iterate on these questions and not just think of it as a static demographic, but rather a dynamic identity that we can kind of really learn from. And like you said, because of Lucid's unique position in the industry and just our scale, I think we're in a unique, you know, position to really have an impact and influence the industry, you know, and drive some of that positive change.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the census because something I forgot about in kind of preparing for this, but, you know, like you mentioned, the market research industry, the sample industry, strategy industry has really relied on the census as a benchmark. And kind of when tackling this, I was thinking about, you know, last year, you know, we had some issues with questions that were going to be asked on the census. Outside of the issues about identity, which is really interesting, this, like you said, the census is not meant to capture identity. It's just really an enumeration of the population, right? So I think it's really cool that we're tackling issues that in marketing and research and how we identify that are so critical to how consumer decisions are made. And slowly, you know, we're not there yet, stepping away from the census. I think it's important from a quota perspective. But as identity shifts, simple things like that don't capture like language, you know, mixed race that aren't captured by the census. I think, you know, the fact that we're kind of throwing, you know, our towel into this space is, I think, super important.
Yeah, it's funny.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's sorry, Trey, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's funny that you bring that up, Mario, because when we were preparing for this podcast, Talia and I were talking, and we realized that there's like a difference between a data point that is sort of concrete and discrete, like how much do you make? Are you employed? Like those are very like yes, no sort of questions. But when you get into questions of identity, it's much more qualitative and much more sort of open-ended, and just giving respondents the space to tell us who they are, I think is very important, and something that we've become aware of throughout the course of this project.
For sure. And what, you know, Whitney, we've been kind of working through some of these questions. Can you, for our audience, kind of talk a little bit about the questions we're tackling and looking to update? And as you mentioned before, also kind of leave open to evolve?
Yeah. So, I mean, the main categories that for some reason cause the most controversy are definitely going to be the ones that, as you said, as what was mentioned, you know, this idea that consumers are self-identifying, like we have to understand in this country, as far as the census is concerned, consumer self-identifying is kind of a relatively new phenomenon. There was a lot of this idea of, I'm going to look at you and I'm going to mark down what you are based on what I see, right? And that's how the census was done. But as consumers have leaned into self-expression and really leaning into this cultural moment where we can claim different aspects of ourselves, what we're doing in that process is deciding if we're really tied to the labels and the variables that were originally created in this country, right? So when we think about gender and how we don't even really know where the evolution of it's going to end, we just know that it's no longer male and female, right? And so making sure that Lucid has some buckets and parameters and ways to think about how identity is being shaped and talked about today and what people want to claim, and making sure that there's space for when the next iteration of that concept, you know, comes down the line. And let's be clear, young people are all about pushing boundaries. So I'm pretty sure there will be some new evolutions and iterations of things coming down the line. We are able to kind of expand our ways of thinking about it and to capture it in real time instead of waiting for the census. There's also a lot of making sure that there's options where people, you know, may not want to identify. Maybe we don't want to be in buckets, and that's okay. You know, and we need to be comfortable with the fact that maybe consumers don't know who they are yet, right? Because the thing about identity markers is there's a lot of certainty in marking off whatever that is based on what people have said we are, what we've kind of, you know, resolved ourselves to be identified as. But sometimes we're in the midst of still deciding those things. And we can have the bucket of undecided or I prefer not to answer to make sure that people feel moving forward that they're not forced to conform or to be one way or the other. And I know, I think from a researcher standpoint, that can sound really scary, right? Because they want these solid variables in which to cut data on. But I think that we've also been thinking and talking about plans to make sure, you know, clients and agencies moving forward feel comfortable with how we're thinking of cutting the data. And I'm pretty sure Talia could speak to that a bit.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in terms of, you know, there's definitely going to have to be, like I said, a little bit of creativity in terms of how we approach some of the, you know, tactics of adjusting quotas and adjusting targeting and how we think about, you know, comparing this year's data to last year's data. But, you know, I think this comes down to, you know, really just prioritizing the fact that we need to make these changes. And, you know, there's really never going to be a better time than right now. So, you know, respondents are ready to give us this information. And so we need to kind of just put in a little bit of that work to make those adjustments so we're ready to receive it in a way that makes sense. I think definitely in terms of, you know, understanding who these humans are and better understanding their identities, but also, you know, just from the context of building a positive rapport with respondents in the survey. You know, if in the very first question, we're asking them their gender and sort of asking them to sacrifice who they are in order to check the box that's there, you know, that's not really setting us up for a positive rest of the survey and really have building trust with them as they go through that initial screener. So, you know, I think it's sort of, it's something that I think has been put off a bit because of this challenge of how do we address, you know, updating some of the fielding strategies. But, you know, like I said, no time like the present. I think now's the time. So I think the industry is ready for it.
And I think that's a great point about building rapport through some of the first questions we ask, which are always demographic questions, right? As an industry, we've struggled so much with, you know, participant fatigue, getting people to answer surveys, response rate, length of surveys. But we can kind of flip the narrative that, okay, yeah, the change is scary, but this is going to help with your response rate, right? Because someone feels more included. And especially, you know, we have issues with the consumers that are least represented in surveys, right? Multicultural, LGBTQIA. So these small shifts can have a big impact when reaching out to this type of respondent.
Yep, absolutely. And I think also, you know, on the survey level, you know, response rates, like you said, but even just thinking about our industry, keeping respondents engaged in surveys in general, you know, if our industry is not catching up with, you know, the other online activities that are kind of biding for respondents' time, you know, what's going to keep them coming back? What's going to make them interested to take a survey in the first place if it seems like it's part of a larger process that doesn't have room for them. So, you know, just in terms of the industry-wide impact of, you know, prioritizing respondent experience, I think this is sort of a critical change.
For sure, right? Because if we tend to look at, you know, people taking surveys, just that universe, but we're really competing with every other online activity, whether it's streaming, social media, club, you know, Clubhouse, audio, video. I mean, so if our industry continues to be not inclusive, why would they choose us over all these other activities?
Exactly.
I think that's a great point as well. You mentioned earlier, like this is the best time to make these changes. And I think one of the biggest pushbacks that I hear with our clients, right, is this idea of longitudinal data. You have all this data, for some Fortune 500 companies, right, decades that they've been building on, and switching one demographic question the way you word it here or there, you know, they don't want to do it because now they lose this longitudinal data that they've been building years over years. I have some thoughts on that, but you know, how are each of you dealing with these conversations? I think it's going to be different for you, Trey and Whitney, but would love to hear your thoughts on that pushback and maybe, you know, how you're dealing with that pushback.
Well, for me, like the conversations that I'm having are with suppliers by and large, and trying to get them to buy into this new paradigm in terms of identity and the way that we ask these questions. And I can tell you, you know, in some cases, we're catching up to what the suppliers are already doing. And that just goes to show, it underlines the point that, you know, we've sort of talked around it on here for a while now, but respondents are our business and they are the product that we're providing. And so we need to make sure that we are treating them with, respect and dignity, essentially. And so suppliers, when approached in that way, suppliers are happy to make these changes to their systems in order to ask the right questions of their respondents. We're essentially meeting them where they are, the respondents, I mean. And also, you know, as a platform, I think suppliers are hungry for any sort of standardization or normalization in terms of like how data is collected and then shared to both Lucid as the platform and then also onto the buyers and the end survey. So again, like all of these things are completely beneficial to both the suppliers and the respondents in my mind.
Yeah. And, you know, Mario, you know me, I'm, I can speak quite decisively about things. So I have less of the experience on the panel side and more of the experience, as it pertains to just talking to clients in general about the nature of their full studies. You know, who are we talking to? How are we going to talk to them? How are we going to recruit them? And definitely in qual as well. I would say qual is a lot more flexible, and a lot of places with qual, they're already there, you know? So qual is a little bit easier because that longitudinal data is not a part of what we do, and we can kind of change the screeners as culture shifts as well, assuming we have a client that's willing to do that. But I think that also, as Trey was kind of saying, is to say, this is already happening, okay? And we can't just have it happen on one aspect of research and not the other. So we need to go ahead and catch up and make it a standard that everyone adheres to and moves forward with and is not afraid to, you know, kind of shift things. And you mentioned timing, Mario, like if this is definitely the time to do it, because when we get down the road and ethnicity is more mixed and more segmented and gender is more mixed and segmented, and we never stopped to at least adjust for the moment that we're in to kind of come to grips with the fact that things are changing and trying to set a standard for how things are going to be in the moving forward, that lift is going to be even more difficult and even harder to get our head around. And what's going to happen is the data is always going to be perpetually irrelevant and always a little off, if you will, especially if our consumers can't see themselves in the way they want to or represent themselves in the work that we're doing.
Yeah, and I think the timing is perfect as well from another perspective in that, you know, we're just hopefully at the tail end of a pandemic. And I think we've seen some rapid acceleration of trends that were happening pre-pandemic. I feel like 3 or 4 years of acceleration towards these trends just happened in this past year. So I feel like longitudinal data is kind of meaningless, giving this unique, hopefully once in a lifetime event, right? So, you know, you can't have a podcast without saying a new normal. So the new normal is going to be totally different coming out of this, right? So I think that's timing from that perspective. I feel like that's another great time, you know? Talking a little bit about data quality, I know that's another aspect of that, Talia, you're really kind of your day to day. I mean, I think that's another aspect of this conversation that's really not talked about, like, is that we're going to be getting better data quality. I mean, can you give your perspective, like how these changes will affect data quality?
Yeah. So, you know, kind of building on what Whitney was saying, you know, with the status quo of how these questions are structured, you know, we're sort of ignoring by not asking these questions in a better way. We're missing out on the opportunity to speak to certain people and see their perspectives. So that's not necessarily a representative data set. You know, so as we continue to develop more representative questions, we're going to be able to better understand who we're talking to and better understand, you know, the market that, you know, a company is trying to make decisions from. If we're just ignoring that these people are, you know, having certain identities, you know, we're not really speaking to them. So I think, you know, the more that we're letting respondents tell us who they are, we're getting better data.
For sure. I mean, Whitney, from a qualitative perspective, you know, you've been iterating on the way that you've been asking screener questions, I'm sure much more rapidly than we have on the sample side. I mean, having those interactions that you have, like how does that improve qualitative data from your perspective?
Yeah. I mean, I just have, I'm a little bit, compared to other researchers, I'm a little bit dogmatic about what I believe research should be. And I tend to be really strong on my standpoints. I actually just had this happen in a qualitative project I was doing. It was, you know, recruiting Black consumers, and I made sure that there was a quota for Black immigrant consumers. And the client was just like, why are we making sure there's a quota for this? And, you know, what is that about? And I was like, well, unless you only want to talk to African Americans and not use the word Black, because that's a more all-encompassing term, you know, we need to make sure that we've recruited people who, you know, maybe weren't born here or their families weren't born here. It was less about them being born in the United States and more about having Caribbean or African roots. Because the ways that they think and their, you know, what kind of informs their day-to-day decisions might be the same, but they might be, you know, nuanced a little bit differently. And we should be able to capture those things. And so when the client was trying to justify that to their stakeholders, you know, I said, I don't do any research without making sure that I'm capturing the multiplicity of Black identity instead of people thinking that it's only one or the other. And more than anything, because of the state that we're in right now, I said, I don't know any clients that are willing to do research on just Black immigrant sample. You know what I'm saying? So they're already a part of Black culture. Some of today's leading artists and famous people are from Dominican Republic or Africa or Barbados or whatever that might be. They're already a part of culture. They're already change makers. Let's just make sure we have them in the sample. So things like that, I write it into my approach. I say, this is what we're going to do. I legitimize it and say, well, you're wrong and I'm behind culture if you don't do it this way. And clients kind of listen. I'm a little bit, I really take a lot of pride in doing work the right way, I think. So, you know, it's either you do it this way or we can find a different partner. And that's okay. You know, I respect both sides of that.
And I mean, it reminds me of something that Trey said, where we're kind of all, the sample industry is just meeting other industries where they're at. And I want to explore that a little bit more, Trey. Like, have you found that, you know, discussing these updates that we're making from a demographic perspective and the way that we ask questions, have you had like suppliers more open to monetizing their audiences on the exchange, or how's that affected those conversations, if at all?
I mean, not really. The suppliers that we have are already bought into our model and our system. And so these, you know, not to disregard the question, but like this is for most suppliers, this is just a standard update to their profiles.
Yeah.
It's not been a major change. I think the biggest thing that they want to ensure is that, you know, and Mario, you mentioned this at the top of the show, that the quotas that these questions are affecting or that are informing are able to keep up with, you know, with the changes in the questions. And that really speaks to, you know, how buyers are going to use these questions as they set up their surveys and set up their quotas. But from a supplier perspective, again, no, it's just, you know, a standard update to their operating system.
Awesome. Well, I think we are hitting there our 30-minute time. So for everybody that wants to learn more about this initiative, you can visit insightsandcolor.com. There'll be a PDF and accompanying blog post explaining the updates. Trey, Talia, Whitney, do you want to plug how people can find you, Lucid, Insights and Color, Touch of Wit online?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can find us at Lucid, LUC.ID. We're also on Twitter at Lucid_HQ.
So it's same with Insights and Color and Touch of Wit. Insights and Color is a diversity initiative. So I just always want to request that you don't send research requests there and send that to Touch of Wit instead.
Awesome. Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.